time is it? Oh, man, are we on the air?
It's also more deadly than your, you know, your even your strenuous flus.
How we doing? just getting up and getting out this morning, doing my vocal exercises in the shower. I didn't know if we were on the air. I guess we are. This is Andy from the Andy and Emmanuel Show, coast to coast, live from Hollywood. We will be live from the UK, I think, when Amanda gets on board here. She's having some internet issues. The show is connected to each other. Oh, yeah. Amanda and I are connected to each other. through the internet. We have never met, folks. It's pretty cool. This is show number, I think the total amount of show coast to coast has been 300 and some, and Amanda and I have done most of those together. I think she joined the program in July of 2020, and we were 5 days a week for a while, and it got to be so much work. We had to cut down to 3 days a week, and but still, nonetheless, we have done hundreds of shows together. It's been fun. We entertain all sorts of guests from all sorts of walks of life, exciting guests from the movie and television and entertainment industry to the sports industry to human, to life and spirituality and, you know, sex and romance and all topics. We don't leave anything go here. At least we try not to. Nothing is scripted. There's no agenda plan. There's no course of action that we get together with before the show and say, hey, we'll cover this, this, and this. It doesn't happen on the show. We just kind of go with whatever's on our mind at any given moment, and it just happens to fall into place. You can join the show here, join the conversation, join, hey, at least me, because Amanda's not here yet, and at least join me by calling 515-605-9888, here to take your calls, Block Talk Radio. Our website is andyandamandashow.com. You can also email the show at andyandamandashow@gmail.com. It's great being with everybody here today. Hope everybody had a really, really good weekend. That's what it is. I can't believe it's another Monday already. Christmas holidays are approaching fast. Oh, my goodness. I just can't, you know. It's unbelievable. You know, it just, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Christmas spirit. Anybody have Christmas spirit yet? Anybody have it? Well, if you do...
I'm not blaming anybody for that.
Thank you, Dick. No, neither am I. You know what I'm saying? That's Dick Nixon, pops in once in a while, has a comment on the show. Pleasure to have him on board with us from time to time. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking, but we're able to reach out into the universe and, you know, we've had this great interview with the former president not long ago. Maybe we'll rebroadcast that again someday soon and let you hear about it. But we have all sorts of people comment on the show, from Dr. Ruth to Ronald Reagan to Alfred Hitchcock to John Madden to Donald Trump, and it just goes on and on and on. Only on the Andy and Amanda Show, as they say. I was going to suggest something to Amanda, but she's not here to suggest it to. So, you know, what was I going to say here? What I was going to do was play a tune here from that was recorded here in our Coast to Coast studios, actually, by a young emerging talent, a singer-songwriter out of Austin, Texas, who I had the pleasure of meeting here, and by the name of Natalie Moore. Natalie Moore, and I heard her sing at a kind of a folk acoustic singer-songwriter showcase I'm involved with here in the L.A. area, and she was there one night when I was there, and heard her sing, and she was visiting family. It was just unreal what she got up on stage and sang. It was
unbelievable.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, what I thought I might do is play a tune that we recorded. I brought Natalie into the studio and said, hey, have you ever Have you ever made a record, a CD, a demo, or been out performing? And the answer was no. I was like, well, you got to come to the studio then. We got to do something because you're let's just put a demo together of some sort because you are quite talented. And when I see somebody, well, and that's my main gig, as most of you know, or if you don't, you know now that my real job when I'm doing this is I'm an acoustic finger pick and blues folk music player. I play all sorts of alternative acoustic music from various genres, from Celtic to blues to folk, alternative tunings. Like it's been noted that I'm a cross between like Leo Kottke and Hot Tuna and Chris Smither, David Bromberg, somewhere in that world, John Prine, Bob Dylan kind of in there. I figured, you know, I got into this. I figured, hell, if Bob Dylan can sing, God damn it, so can I. Anyway, but I've been doing that for a really long time. That's my main gig. And I see somebody who's emerging or talented, and I just in me to go out and try to create opportunities for them. That's what it's about. So, I guess I've been going on about what I do and about the talented Natalie Moore for so long that maybe I should just go ahead and cut to a tune of hers right now. Why not? Because it's just me and we could do that. You know what I'm saying? So here is Natalie Moore with a rough demo we cut of a tune called Better Than That. I can say. I hear that, and she looked marvelous, and she looked. She, let me tell you something, my darling. It's not as fortunate as how you feel, it's just how you look. And she looked. Well, enough said. Anyway, now, yes. You, hey, that sounds like a set. That sounds like a call from Hawaii. Holy mackerel there. Whoa.
Indeed hey, it is.
How you doing,
hey,
man?
Hey, Andy.
Great.
Okay. We survived the big storm last weekend and power outages.
We talked about that. Cornell and Amanda both were saying, I wonder how Jet's do in Hawaii, because, of course, it was worldwide news what was going there in Hawaii with all the weather. How'd you fare out?
Well, we had a couple of days of dark days because ran out of power. The power went out, and that means no Internet. And then finally the phone went out last Monday. And I said, heck with it, I can't sit here in the dark. So I jumped in the car and went up to town so at least I could get a couple bars on my phone and buy some kitty supplies and everything. And I rolled back home just as the power came back on. So.
Oh, man.
But I had one friend who called me on Thursday, and he said his power had just come back. So.
Tough times. Weather's crazy, as you know.
It sounds like
we have Amanda joining us. Yeah, because Chet doesn't like talking. I mean, he doesn't want to talk to me. But much rather talk to Amanda. Of course, I don't blame him. I'd do the same.
Yeah.
Amanda, are you with us?
Amanda's putting together our huge hit.
Amanda, you there? We can't hear you. You're showing on board here, but you're not coming through. Try again, babes. My partner in internet talk radio, Amanda Love, is having some internet.
Hello.
Whoa. Ow, that hurt.
I'm so sorry.
Ow. Wait, I gotta take my headset off for a second and clean up my ears. Hold on a second here.
Oh, Charmin.
Yeah, don't forget to get that floss all the way through there, Andy.
Hey, Chet. Chet, my man, how you doing?
Aloha, Amanda.
Aloha, sweetheart.
Well,
it's so good to hear your voice.
I'm dry.
You're dry. Okay, so who's wet?
We were talking about the big storm last week and a half ago.
Oh, that sounds. I hope it wasn't a dangerous one, was it?
Well, it actually was, because it means the wind's coming from the other direction. Normally, I have a 13,500 foot mountain that keeps hurricanes and all that garbage from hitting us. In the way.
Yeah.
But the wind was coming from the opposite direction. So it's coming straight up the slot and whipping the trees and taking out power lines on the west side. But it's all done now until the next time.
Until the next time.
Better than tornadoes, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Kentucky, right? They said Kentucky tornadoes, something.
That
was devastating. I mean, one tornado. There was a bunch of them, but one made a trek 200 miles across the state of Kentucky. 200. That never happened. Amanda, turn down just a little bit. Turn your mic volume down a little bit. You're peaking here.
Ooh, okay. Let me see.
Not that I mind when. Yes. But anyway, it's always.
Well, is that
not only that,
better?
But the
better,
entire
better, yeah.
The tornado alley is moving eastward into more populated areas due to climate change.
Yeah, it is. It is. And some people say, "Oh, climate change." Yeah, well, come on, folks, wake up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of waking up that needs to be done, that's for sure.
Yes, unreal.
But
it's devastating. I mean, entire towns were wiped out. I mean, leveled, flattened. There was a great big Amazon warehouse that was torn apart. It killed six employees. And they thought there was a big candle company there that they thought that 90 lives were taken, and they found that not to be true. Of course, there were some lives, but four or five, they thought the whole factory was demolished, and the 90 people they reported
the
missing
factory,
or dead.
They're saying was 40 dead.
Yeah, they came out just recently and said that six, you know, ends up just being six, which is still too many. I mean, you know, one, but you know, and a hurricane. I remember not a hurricane, tornado. I heard a tornado once, and it sounds like a literally does. You keep hearing this description time and time again. Every time one comes nearby or it's a witness that survived to be able to tell about it, that it literally sounds like a freight train. It literally sounds like a train. That's exactly what it sounds
like.
Wow. Like a train coming through town. It gets louder and louder and louder. And then suddenly if you get into the middle of it, you might actually get sucked up and end up in this land of midgets and colorful flowers and wicked witches and nice witches and beautiful castles. And
I've heard that. And a wizard, right?
Yeah.
Well, according to that documentary from 1939, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they all passed afterwards, apparently, as well, didn't they? All the midgets. Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's scary. I mean, we don't get anything like that here in the UK. We've had, like, mini tornadoes. You see them sometimes sweeping across the fields. But there's nothing ever big and dramatic as you see in the US. So I'm very thankful for that. You know, I see in the movies, you know, I hear it on the news, and I'm just like, whew, I'm glad I'm not near that. Because it must be scary. A friend of mine said it was. Yeah.
I thought growing up, when a tornado comes by, that's where you ended up.
Yeah. Excellent. It's on its way to pick you up now. Where you're going to go, no one knows. It's a surprise.
I haven't changed. I haven't changed my beliefs ever since. I'm still, you know. Oh, the innocence of childhood. May it never disappear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. Just hearing that. Yeah.
I thought I heard a tornado when I was a real young kid in Southern California. But it was really one of those big, giant locomotives, steam locomotives, went running by behind the house.
You know, my sister has a house outside in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and you know, nothing happens there. I mean, it's like nothing happens there. And a tornado came by, and it took a tree down. It landed on their roof, and this years ago. And it made the front page of the newspaper in the community. It was the picture of the tree on the roof of their house. But the kids were all woken up, all scared in the middle of the night. And my sister and her husband at the time, they all got up, and they heard this freight train coming through, and bam, this tree landed on the roof, and it was very scary. Nobody got hurt in that tornado, but it was did touch down. We're outside of Philadelphia in a very populated area. That was years ago. But, yeah, Chet, what you're saying is right, and as a pilot, you know, especially during season and tornadoes and those types of storms tend to be seasonal, and there's an alley that typically is almost like an above ground tunnel, if you will. It's like an alley, and we call it Thunderstorm Alley in the aviation world. And quite often when you navigate and fly down there and do your approaches and departures, you're going around these cells, these cumulus clouds. Some develop into thunderstorms, some don't. But it's typical to have that type of activity, you know, where you get fronts are converging and a lot of unstable air. And, you know, a tornado in itself is nothing more than it's nothing more, it's actually pretty major, but what it is in meteorology is a very condensed low-pressure system onto its own. You get these swirling winds and low pressure inside the tornado, high pressure outside. This thing just barrels through in destructive means. And, of course, they rate the tornadoes in terms of categories, 1 through 5, I believe it is, one time I had a departure out of, as a matter of fact, it was Father's Day. I'm going back now. I'm going to date myself. Father's Day, 1989 or 90, 91, somewhere, forget, but somewhere in there. We had a departure out of Chicago to Detroit, and it was pretty turbulent taking off out of Chicago, and the two of us were sitting there, you know, playing, put the plane on autopilot for the departure. And we had a bunch of passengers in the back, and we're climbing out like a bat out of hell. You know, we weren't too heavy. And suddenly we got slammed down like somebody picked the airplane up and dropped it on a basement floor. I mean, it was bam. And I'm strapped in. I took my shoulder harnesses off, my seatbelts on, and my head about just barely hit the top of the ceiling on the flight deck.
Wow.
And we looked at each other, and we looked at, we have, you know, very complicated and very, you know, very significant weather detection systems on the aircraft. You got to call our weather radar and so forth. And we looked at that. We're playing with knobs and pushing things and switching things. There's nothing here. There's nothing that would depict any precipitation, which is what bounces back on your radar. It's pretty simple. So then we talked to air traffic control. We talked to Chicago Departure and said, hey, you know, you painting any weather that we're not picking up here? Is there a cell here or something that we're not getting? And they said no. And and the passengers in the back were like, whoa, what the hell is that? And we said, that's what we said. I don't know. And we got to Detroit. We went to a flight ops there in Detroit and looked at all the returns and the weather maps and so forth, and found two tornadoes right in our departure path. And what we had concluded is that we went right over the top of one, and we got sucked. Bam! You know, right? You know, it's not going to be a plane traveling at 250 miles an hour into it, if you're flying over it, that is. But it will pull you in. Bam! And we just got, you know, you go to the top of it in a heartbeat. You know, that's how fast you're traveling. But
yeah.
But I'll never forget. I mean, imagine being in your house, just sitting in the living room watching TV or something, and this great big hand picked your whole house and dropped you on cement. Well, just dropped you flat on cement.
Wow.
But I've been in significant turbulence. I've flown through, unfortunately, not destructive thunderstorms, but thunderstorms, and have been in snowstorms and low visibility and clear air turbulence, which is just as bad as anything you can't see. And so I've been through a lot of weather in my aviation career. I'd never, ever experienced anything like that. I mean, it was, I could, you know, anyway. But it just give you a feel what tornadoes are. I mean, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know,
I went through something like that when I was getting my private pilot's license.
So you know what I mean.
We were flying back from practicing east of Altamont, and we were coming back over Altamont Pass, which is where they got all the windmills stuff. And we were coming up over Livermore Airport, and then going to take a right turn to Buchanan Field, and all of a sudden we started losing altitude like crazy.
Yeah.
And
wow.
I ended up putting it in a full power climb, and we're still like dropping 500-750 feet a minute.
Jeez. And was the air density
that downdraft in a Cessna 150.
Oh my god.
That was scary.
Isn't it scary?
It's going to drive us right into the ground, but then, we got past it and poof.
Yeah, out of nowhere, suddenly you're just like, you know, I've been in thunderstorms where the up and down drafts will take the airplane up 1,000 feet and down 1,000 feet in a heartbeat. I mean, just you're climbing up like an elevator, like you're shaking around, like you're bumping and it's turbulent, your plane's bouncing all around. It's you know, nothing's going to happen. It's just an uncomfortable ride. I mean, something can happen if it was really, you know, full blossom.
Closer to the ground.
or
we were only at 3,000 when we got started getting sucked towards the ground.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So it was special.
These up and down drafts can exceed, you know, 1,000 feet, in a few seconds.
In a couple seconds.
In a couple seconds. 1,000. So if you're
just want an appreciation for how insignificant we really are.
Doesn't it though? Oh,
at
yeah, when you're
level.
up It really does. It really gives you a perspective when you're up there in the weather, in which has been there for ever since the Earth was formed, in the atmosphere, and you're flying around. It really does. And when you think about it philosophically, you're like, whoa. You know, and you look down at the ground, and you're like, which I really kind of never gave this much thought till now. But you look down at the ground, and it's like, God, the ground formations and the sky has been here like forever, since the beginning of time. And here we are participating in it. Do you
wow.
remember the book, Chet? Do you remember the book way back when called Jonathan Livingston Seagull?
Mm-hmm.
About the seagull who philosophized, I guess that's the right word, flight, experience of flying itself. Just couldn't believe the seagull was – he just enamored with flying, you know. And guess I felt the same way at the time until you start doing it for a living and you're up and down, which is great. It's a great job. Not knocking it. A lot of pilots out there. A lot of my friends are professional pilots. But for me, I felt kind of like, just for me personally, it was more like being a limo or a bus driver up and down, back and forth and up. And I just wanted to, I felt like I had more to offer to the world by playing Kumbaya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I play new music.
Yeah.
That's like what my mom said to me once. She said it was about my band in college. She said, well, you know, this music thing is really nice, but what are you really going to do?
A lot of people have that response though with their children and stuff. It's just like, they don't take music seriously. It's like a passion thing that should be, you know, just kept as a passion a lot of the time, which is quite sad, really. I guess because from their experience, they've seen how, on the outside, you know, how it's hard to get into that type of business, and, you know, you've got to be something special. It kind of makes you wonder if they have faith in their kids to actually, you know, be that and believe in them to achieve that. I don't think they should dampen their dreams like that. That's, you know, just my view. And I would never tell any children, don't pursue music, you know, don't do this. If you believe that you can do this, go for it. And if you fail, you learn something valuable from it, right?
Yeah.
I think they were just disappointed that I was such an underachiever in everything, except music.
it comes down to all families are different, what kind of background they come from, the hardships they've had and, you know, what they've experienced. So they just want the best for their kids at the end of the day, don't they, you know? I understand
that. Corporate executive, like my old man.
Oh.
Yeah, my father was a very well-known, pioneer physician in pulmonary disease and research, and he lectured around the world, and he practiced very well respected. He told us when we were very young, very little, because you think, you know, your dad's a doctor, you're going to go into medicine. So many of my friends whose dads were doctors, they go into medicine. Their dads were lawyers, they go into law. Not across the board, but it happens a lot. So there was a period of time when I thought, you know, in my young teens, that that's what I was going to do. I was going to, you know, I worked in my dad's lab for summer jobs, and, you know, I thought I was going to go into medicine. But he told us, first of all, I hated school and academics. So there's no way I would have done it. But anyway, he told us at a young age not to go into medicine because he predicted what we're seeing today in the 60s. That socialization of medicine. He said these people with master's degrees who've never touched a patient or probably maybe never taken an aspirin outside of a headache are making medical decisions for patients, and they've got business degrees, and we're physicians. And the socialization, what's going on, the practice insurance, he predicted everything that we're seeing today in medicine in the 60s.
Wow.
I mean, exactly how it's more exactly like how it's happening.
The privatization, corporatization.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
He told us, he's just going to be a rat race. Don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. All right. So I'll play the guitar then. Hell with it. No. It's funny when you think about parents, because, you know, I was a flight instructor. I was teaching people how to fly airplanes when I was, 18, 19 years old, and I got a job with the regional airline when I was 23. You know, I was on corporate charters and freight. And so I think my folks liked it. That I was a captain or I was a flight instructor. I think that was, whether I liked it or not, I don't know. But they'd really liked it, that mother, son. And my brother, my brother is very, you know, my brother's been in National Geographic magazine and has been on TV, and you know, he's a very well known anthropologist, and he's director of the Institute of Human Origin and part of that Lucy expedition, not part of the Lucy expedition, but what happened afterward with the finding of that 4-million-year-old skeleton. And I've held our ancestors' remains in my hand that my brother brought back from the Hadar Valley in Ethiopia. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But anyway, so he was really well known, so I think my folks, like, well, they're, you know, because they're you know, Bill Kimball's my brother's name. You can look him up. But anyway, Bill Kimball and my one son's an anthropologist, one son's a pilot. And, pretty cool. And then I said, you know, but I want to play guitar.
Black and white.
I want to sing Kumbaya and get paid for it. All right. No complaints, by the way. No complaints. Kumbaya is a good song.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I love it. Honest. Used to sing when I was a kid, and then got tired of it by the time I was a teenager.
So I mainly called in to find out where this Hollywood place is.
Who?
Oh.
I think
who?
You need to fire your headline writers. It's got Live from Hollywood and the UK, coast to coast, Andy and Amanda.
Oh, yeah. Hollywood. I like that.
What's the name of a movie we're producing? Hollywood.
It's kind of oily and holy at the same time.
You got all those little dinosaurs in the desert sucking the last petroleum out of the ground.
Oh.
Hollywood.
Hollywood. Yeah, it's actually a suburb of Hollywood that a lot of people don't actually know about. But it's a little town, and has little people living in it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, guys, I got something I want to share with you.
They raise ostriches, I think.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah. I think they do.
Oh.
And they have, like the sign that says ostriches, food or meat. Pets are meat or meat. Oh, I blew the line. Ah, damn it. I stole it. Pets or meat. Ostriches for sale.
So, something I want to share with you guys. Okay.
But you can't. Next. Anyway.
You're going to hear it, damn it.
Yes.
I'm joking.
Come on, Andy. She's the boss.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
That would be nice. No, I don't mean with Andy. I mean just, yeah, I've never seen anybody's ever called me that before.
Oh, I love it. I love what you talked about, Amanda. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep that in mind.
Oh,
so,
you
know, I said that someone close to me got COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
I expressed that on the last show.
Mm-hmm.
So, here's the situation. They did 3 home tests. Okay, the lateral flow tests that were given out by our government, and the newest form, because the original form had the swab at the back of the throat as well as up the nose, okay? So the latest one they've been given out is the one that just goes up the nose, and the waiting time to see the results is halved to only 15 minutes. So I was thinking, okay, why have they changed this kit? You know, I was very curious about it all. Anyway, so this person, I don't really want to express who they are on the air because, you know, I think they're quite shy with that kind of thing. So I'm trying to be respectful. So they, I'm using that word they again, Andy. Please note.
I'm hearing it. Yeah.
I'll say she. Okay. She did 3 tests that said they were all positive for COVID. Mm-hmm. And something wasn't right. She didn't have the 3 main symptoms. Okay, which was, you know, like the loss of taste and smell. What was the other 2?
coughing and wheezing, I think.
Yeah, that's it. The coughing and the other one. Yeah.
The irritation of the left pinky finger.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, that's the one. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have the 3 main symptoms. However, she had the tight chest, continuous headache. Her whole body went weak and limp. She was panicking a little and, you know, the chest was starting to get tighter and tighter. So, of course, having these tests, all proving, you know, or saying that she had COVID, she just thought, oh, well, crap, I better order, you know, go and have a PCR test. So she ordered one through the post, and she did this PCR test, and that came back negative. So there was a lot of confusion, like, what's going on here? So they did two of the older tests from the home kits, mm-hmm. and that came back negative. So she's like, this is ridiculous. So she spoke to somebody on a health line, the National Health Service health line, and this nurse said to her, throw those kits out straight away. They're useless. Mm. They only detect about 6% accuracy of COVID. 6%. Mm. She said, if you have a PCR test, you will have about a 78 to 85% reading of it coming back positive, if you are positive. So, you know, I was like, so the government is spending all this money on these tests that don't work. But yet now there's probably millions of people that's having these tests panicking, thinking they got COVID because they are inaccurate. So if you've got some sort of virus, what it is, it's oversensitive to that, and it's actually picking up whatever virus you've got, thinking it's COVID and telling you you've actually got COVID. So I recommend for anybody listening, please get a PCR test to be doubly sure. And don't be silly and follow my words and throw out all your kits. This is what somebody has told us on the health line. Okay, if you want to inquire for yourself, please do so, because I find this very important and frustrating that, you know, this poor person's gone through all this stress thinking they had COVID, and, you know, there's been a lot of confusion. So, and the fact that these tests are just 6% accurate is disgusting. So that was that. And then, you know, I said to you, I'm trying to get my booster shot arranged. I can't do it for the level of money, because apparently the NHS website crashed because hundreds of thousands of people have been trying to put their booster, because Boris Johnson changed his mind from everybody having it by the end of January to preferably everybody having it by the end of December. And now it's been offered to younger people as well. So everybody's like trying to get this vaccine. And the walking centres have had hundreds of people just queuing for hours, up to 4 hours, they've been waiting to try and get this vaccine. So I'm getting a little nervous by now, because I'm meant to be traveling by the end of January, and I want to try and get it before, you know, serious things kick off. Because I'm also saying now that the two vaccines are not strong against the new variant at all, because we've had one hospitalization. And we've got 22% of all cases here in the UK now, which is the new variant. So it is spreading fairly quickly, but that's to be expected. Like, we all knew this was going to happen. But, you know, so it's a bit concerning at the moment with what's going on with all that. Everybody's panicking. Everybody's trying to get it done before Christmas, because everybody wants to be covered and spend time with their family members and all that kind of thing. So we're not called the United Kingdom right now. We're called United Chaos. I think that's what we should be known as. United Chaos. Yeah.
Well, and then as Andy's father was saying, over here, if you want to get a COVID test, it can cost you anywhere from $20 to $850. With $127 being the median cost.
Whoa.
And good luck getting your insurance company to pay for it, et cetera, you see, because we have for-profit remedial sick care in the United States rather than a health care system.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good actually, a musician I jam with every once in a while here is responsible for, I mean, could yet the COVID tests are free in California still. Actually, I think, for a lot of places, their government still picks up the tab. But and know what they do now? When you get a test or even your vaccine, they do collect your insurance card and they do bill your insurance company. If you don't have one, you get the vaccine anyway, and the government picks up the tab. But he was saying in L.A., and he's responsible for the coordination of funds from the federal government to the state to the city of L.A., and it's a huge, I mean, huge, and he's an attorney. That's what he is, but that's his job. And we play guitar. He used to come over a lot more often than he does now, just between both of our schedules. But anyway, he was here just a couple weeks ago and telling me the literally, as you were saying, the chaos in the funding. Who's going to pay? Where's, you know, there's millions of people here. And you know, tests going on and vaccines going on, and where is who's paying for this? Where is it coming in? Where who's got to pay? Who owes what for what? And it's absolutely crazy. It keeps them employed, of course, it's not so. As Chet was saying, the actual role. And then I got my booster shot at Ralph's, which is the pharmacy, which is like a big, you know, supermarket with a pharmacy inside, you know. And on the counter was a do-it-yourself COVID test, $14.95. You know, take it home and do it at home for $15.
Okay.
That's the one Amanda's talking about, though.
That's the one, right. That's the one, yeah.
And do you happen to know if that new one is down, it's just the one that goes up your nose? Because I'd be interested if it was the same type of kit.
I don't know anything about it. All I saw was the price. Do it at home, $14.95.
Well,
no idea.
I just did a lookup, and I got a website, the 20 best COVID tests.
Mm-hmm. The 20.
And I'll bet, you know, 19 of the 20 are probably scams. I mean, they're just cashing in.
Wow.
You know,
that's the other thing.
Like you said, 8%, they should be thrown in jail for selling a test like that rather than making money.
Yes, and the thing is as well, that's the other thing that's in the news right now. The government has stopped sending out the tests because so many people have been trying to get hold of them. And that's what worries me now, is now we've got Christmas coming up and all these tests have been ordered and they're stopping sending them out. It's like, how many people are going to have a cold or some sort of virus that naturally goes around, which are still going around, and it's all going to come back COVID, and then they're going to be jamming the health system with ringing up for PCR tests, going to the hospital, showing up at hospitals, and it's just like, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. I am stunned by all of this, and when somebody's going through something as serious as that, because we all know that mind over matter a lot of the time as well. When you're ill, when you're sick, you know, how you think about yourself being ill plays a big part. So if you believe you're going to die from something, you're contributing to your immune system shutting down on you. So if you're believing this test result is saying COVID, that person's going to have a meltdown. Oh, my God, I got COVID, you know, which is what happened to this person. And so, you know, they were literally freaking out that they had COVID, and it was just such an awful situation. And the relief when it came back that, you know, they were actually negative, but there was the anger, of course, of finding out that it was only 6%. And then person, whoever this health person is, you know, she could be wrong. She could be wrong. She could be given the wrong information. But I felt important to share with everybody to be wise to what's happening, to check if you can. I mean, the last thing I want to do is contribute to our phone lines being jammed up with people panicking. But I'm also concerned about people's health and doing the right thing and finding out if you've truly got COVID. You know, so.
Yeah, of course.
What do you do?
Yeah.
It's a fine line.
It is. Do you know, I think we talked about this on Friday show. Less than one third. This is scary. You know, we have 64% of the population has been vaccinated. One third of those. Well, no, that's not that true. One third of the people who are eligible for a booster shot, which means if you had the Pfizer, and I think it's 6 months, Modelo is 8 months. And I don't know, J&J's 2 weeks after, I don't know, whatever. you're eligible for a booster. So one third of the folks that are eligible have received their booster. One third. which means that over a period of time, as they wait longer and longer and longer, their susceptibility to become infected and to have consequences of that infection of COVID become greater and greater and greater. So what? Yes. It's just, you know what, we get asked, and we've had talked about this, had callers come in and email, you know, is this ever going to go away?
No.
Ever?
No, it isn't.
The flu didn't.
Exactly. I think the virus is always going to be around. However,
to what extent, though? Yeah. I mean, the flu's been out there. Yeah, we do. And as a matter of fact, My daughter's lost a friend who died of flu when at 18 or 19 years old. I remember back then. But
my goodness.
I saw before COVID was that 60,000 people per year in the United States died from the flu, but mostly older folks like me. Cardiac case, old folks kind of thing. But 60,000 people a year. Yeah. From the flu, and we'll probably see that for maybe even more because it's such
But that means it's never going away. We didn't see people walking around with masks because of the flu. I mean, maybe there may be a few, but basically, you know what I mean.
Actually, one of the reasons that the flu deaths are down so far is because people are walking around wearing masks.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about that. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. God, it's crazy. I mean, think about this world we're living in now. It's, oh my God, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh.
So much is changing, isn't it? It really is.
It's just as dangerous as it's always been, but it's a lot more mobile now.
It depends.
You're absolutely right, Chet.
It is mobile, but it depends on your carrier. You know, it depends if who your carrier is. Apple, T-Mobile, AT&T,
Verizon. Gray Cell, Ferguson Airline, and Storm Door Company telephone.
Right. I don't know. Crazy.
Well, apparently, most of the COVID patients that have been recently in hospital over here are actually unvaccinated people, and they're saying do it now before it's too late, because the variant is growing stronger, and if you're unvaccinated, I mean, they're saying that with two vaccinations with this new variant, it's not looking likely that it will completely defend it. So they're saying that with the latest Pfizer booster that you've got somewhat protection, but they're now saying that with two shots it's not looking likely. So if these people have no vaccination, I hope they've got very good immune systems, because I would hate to see anybody get this and go through the tragedy of what it does to you. And it's horrific. I mean, what we went through in these past 2 years, witnessing people and all these stories from doctors and nurses and actual patients that have been through this, and even hearing those that we know that's had this saying, it's not nice at all, it really took me off my feet, and I thought I was going to die, and all this kind of stuff. It's horrible to hear. So, in a way, I commend people for sticking to their decisions, because simply because of this, not that I agree with it, but I admire them for sticking by something they truly believe in, regardless of how threatening and, this is. But at the same time, I think it's a little silly when the seriousness of it is just so ridiculously high, and it's taking out people's lives left, right, and center. And we've got this proof all around us. And if anything now, more and more people we know are getting this, and that's proof alone that this is real, that it is happening to people. And, we do need to protect ourselves from it. Okay, seriousness over.
Yeah.
I need a beer.
You and me both.
I need a beer.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
This congressional insurrection committee is getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and starting to release more and more information about what they have. I think we all know what they're kind of zeroing in on as they dot more I's and cross more T's here. But the former White House chief of staff, a guy named Mark Meadows, it was discovered, almost released. They knew about it for a while, but it was recently released that he sent an email. This is for the January 6th raid on our Capitol, right? He said in his email that the National Guard would be present to protect. that's what they wanted. Yeah, overthrow. But would be present to protect the pro-Trump people. That the president would have the National Guard protect all those pro-Trumpers carrying Trump and Confederate flags onto our nation's capital. And of course, he has been subpoenaed to testify before Congress and is not going, and has contempt and all this. You know, Trump told everybody, nobody pay attention. Like, what? He's an ordinary citizen right now. He's got, like, I think he can still pardon him or something. You know what I mean? Like, he's telling everybody, ignore the subpoenas. You know, you get a subpoena from Congress. That's serious. I mean, nobody's ever been criminally prosecuted, as far as I know, for not adhering to a congressional subpoena. They're doing it now, you know, they're doing it now. And, it was just one thing after another, hearing all about the lead up and the things that Trump said and Mark Meadows and some other, the people surrounding the president at the time, regarding the protections of these people and waiting for 2 hours before the president did anything to even attempt to make a half-assed attempt to call them off, which he did 2 hours later after things started. In the meantime, he's watching it on TV. It's great delight what's going on January 6th. And, you know, it's unreal. And it's amazing we're still talking about it. You know, believe it or not, I cannot believe that it's not, you know, a year anniversary is not, you know, it's close. You know, we're less than a month away.
Yeah.
For one anniversary. And,
wow.
You know, in a way, we're kind of okay moving on to the conversation, but they're gonna find out, and the reason why, I mean, you know, figure out who's criminally liable for this, and I think there are people who are criminally liable, and they will hopefully be brought to justice appropriately. But they also want to say what you know, this can never ever ever happen again. So let's just figure out what were the components, what were the logistics, how did this thing happen, who talked to who, when, you know, we don't want this ever to happen again, so let's figure out how it all laid out, and if we need to, let's put legislation in place that would prevent it from ever happening again. No president is allowed to orchestrate a coup. That's easy enough.
Right.
Why don't we just say that, then move on?
Yeah, right.
why don't we just say that? Okay, move on. Okay, next, let's talk about bettering America, bettering the people, bettering education, bettering food, bettering transportation, all these things we got to improve. But as Chet said, global warming. Look what's going on. Look what's going on with at the beginning of our show, we were talking about the tornado alley moving up and moving out, getting out of town, trying to find some new areas to conquer. You know, Kentucky, holy crap, that's way north. And so anybody who goes out there knows, no global. You know, we have videos and proof that glaciers are melting and drifting, and the ocean temperature is changing, and the ocean levels are rising. All these things are happening. It's not that they wouldn't happen. All right. There are people out there. Well, this is normal. But the rate of change is what they're measuring. And suddenly, if you start seeing some spikes and changes in that rate. Not in change, because the Earth is forever changing. Of course it is. Until it no longer is here, it's going to be continuing to change. But the rate of those, how and when and where, and the rate of change is what's being measured and documented as and is true and is real. Global warming is real. And how you get these idiots who go on conservative talk shows and radio and Fox News and Newsmax and all these other things? It's all myth. We have scientists that say this, and you know why? Hey, Amanda, do you remember, I think it was on Wednesday's show last week when we talked about these supposed scientists that come out of the woodwork who say things that can be admired by conservative talk show and conservative news outlets? Do we remember what that one little short word is about these scientists that come out and say these things and why they come out and say it? Remember that discussion?
I vaguely remember that discussion. I can't remember the word. I'm going to be honest.
the word was – wait a whole second. Hold on a minute. Hold on. I got to do this right. Bear with me here.
Okay.
I can't think. I got to do this right. If we're going to do this, we got to do it right. You know what I'm saying?
Tension is building. Absolutely.
Build that tension. Okay. All right. Tell me I can't find it. Oh, come on, Andy. Come on. bear with me here. Bear with me. I know it's here.
Here he comes to save the day.
Yes. Okay, maybe alphabetical order. I'll do it that way. Here we go.
Oh.
I think I got it.
Oh.
I think I got it.
You search.
Okay, here
files.
We go. I got it. Okay. For 10 points, there is a human, a character within human beings that can drive some people more than others. That is also what gets
ego.
Relatively, yeah.
Oh, I feel good. I feel
Thank you for that opportunity. You get what the curtain with Carol Merrill is now standing behind. I get Carol Merrill. Anyway, so
my days.
But so you get anyway. You get all these. Hey, we have scientists that say there's no global warming at all. But who are they? Who where do these people come from? You know, and you know. Oh, suddenly they're in the headlines. Suddenly they're on the radio. Suddenly they're being interviewed. Woo wee.
Okay, wow. So who's being paid to say either we have or we haven't? Because one of them is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or here's a chance to get on that, to get 15 minutes of fame by saying, you know what, I'm a PhD and a scientist and a professor here at this whatever it is, or I have this, or I know somebody, whatever. And that documentation, there's nothing that could significantly or substantially prove that global warming is real. But the truth of the matter is, and the reality of it is, I mean, if you're here in the physical world living every day as real as we are here, that's how real global warming is. That's how real it is. It's happening. And if we don't do something about it, then I don't know. What are we going to do? We'll do the best we can here on this show, but I don't think it's going to make a big difference, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know?
Carol Merrill is 80 years old now.
I changed my mind.
Oh, really?
She's 80 years old.
She'll be 81 on January 19th.
Well, I know some people who would...
I rather enjoy it myself.
Yeah, well, you go ahead. Not me. Yeah.
We're not getting any younger either.
No, you know we're not. you know, I look around, as I look around, you know, and I see... rising, emerging music and musicians and actors and politicians. And a lot of them, you know, it's spooky because a lot of them, Chet, are a lot younger than you and I. I don't know about Amanda. I think, you know. Amanda's,
Oh, thank you. This show has been very kind to me today.
And you see, but as you grow older chronologically, I'm not growing up mentally because I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. So anyway, as you grow older chronologically, you look because you feel the same. I mean, I feel this. I could be 25 mm-hmm. or 30 or whatever. I don't feel any different. But the fact of the matter is, your life, your span, your existence is going shorter and shorter and shorter every single day. You know, and it's kind of scary in a way. I mean, it's kind of you're like, was this real? And then you see people on YouTube and TV and everywhere and all these, you know, new even I don't care, new actors, new news anchors. I mean, pick your new milkman. I don't care, whatever. that are and they're all younger than you. You know,
it gets scarier. Almost everybody that's dying now is almost younger than me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I was really kind of shocked by the monkey. Oh gosh,
the monkey say hey.
See,
was the
I'm
monkey?
So old, I can't remember. Mike Nesmith died the other day.
He died.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh my God! I just saw a YouTube video. I just saw a YouTube video of a monkey reunion. It was just him and Mickey Dolenz with a backing band, and Mike Nesmith was sitting in a height in a chair, and he got up and sang. And then he sat back down, and he looked like a very very old man. He looked older than I thought he was. And Mickey Dolenz. And then before that, I saw a YouTube video of the entire band, excluding Michael Nesmith, never participated except for one concert they did at Wembley Stadium, and he was there for that reunion of the Monkees. He. Oh my God. Well, that's something we got to address.
Well, Mickey,
I think we'll address that on Wednesday's show, Amanda. I think we're going to do a monkey special.
Yeah,
my God.
That's awesome. Monkey.
Mickey did say it was really good that Mike could go do that tour. That it really was good for him.
How old? Do you know how old he
was?
Chet, do you know how old he was?
78.
What did he die from? That's not. What did he die from at 78 years old? Do you know?
This second, I'll look it up.
Good, look it up. Meantime, my monkey songs. Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and I'm not a stepping stone, and I'm a believer. And Mary, Mary, where are you going to? Remember?
Everybody loved the Monkees here.
I'm not doing it. I heard Bob Dylan is doing a Monkees tribute album.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it looks like about the same thing that's probably going to take me out. He had quadruple bypass surgery in 2018. Probably had.
Oh, no, it's
heart,
not going to happen
heart
to you,
just wasn't working right. So I'm a little better off. I have 50% heart, so.
Chet, you don't go anywhere.
Darling,
Chet.
You've got 150% heart, my darling.
This
you
world
are
needs you, Chet. You're not going nowhere. Nowhere. You're
absolutely.
This world and this show needs you. You can't go anywhere. We're not letting you.
That's
you
right.
Just, you
None
take,
of that.
You take care of yourself.
Self-fulfilled prophecy nonsense.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
You understand? Okay. I'm serious, man. You take care. Yeah, please. At first, we got to do the tour
well,
together.
I don't plan on. You know, you were talking, Amanda, about state of mind. When I had that massive heart attack that usually kills people back in 2018, I remember this one time I'm lying in the helicopter in agony being flown to the hospital, and I had this flash across my brain that was, wow, this could kill me. And then I went, nah, I'm not ready to go. So I stayed alive instead. But
wow.
Yeah, it's like state of mind. I just refused to die of it that time and hope
to maintain
that.
That's amazing, though. So I believe in that so much because there's so much science that proves it as well. There really is.
Well,
that, you know,
it's mainly having stuff to do. You know, I'm looking at my calendar here, and we've got like,
okay.
We've got like, you know, 9 gigs this month, 9-10 gigs. We just,
well, at least
you know, a half of them are five hour shows, and so I can't go now. I got all this work to do.
Yeah, I understand. But, I'd love to just dedicate one show at some point in the near future to go looking into all of that. Because I love the whole idea of the power of the mind, what we're capable of. You know, it's incredible. Because you hear about those people, don't you, that have seen people in accidents, like somebody being crushed by a car. And they've gone over and this person's lifted up a car with almost like superhuman strength. In that moment, something just triggered in them that gave them that strength, that one single thought that fired off something that gave them that strength to lift that car to get that person out. And they can't do it ever since. And, you know, that's incredible.
And then another points out another failure of our healthcare systems, especially in Great Britain and the United States, because they tend to ignore the mind-body connection.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's a complete holistic system.
Right.
And if you're just treating the symptoms of the physical part, you're not likely to actually affect cures, which is a good thing in the United States because cures are hurt profit. But this complete... You know, that would be a good, great discussion. Really get into a little more into the weeds on the mind-body connection and how significantly our spirit and interest in life and all that has an effect on our health.
For one example, if I can give you an example of, there was a time when, okay, this is not very nice for men, obviously, but when a woman menstruates, obviously she's losing blood, right? So she's losing iron at the same time. And there was a time when I was literally going to hospital from being anemic. I didn't know I was anemic. I just started to feel extremely tired because my cycle lasted for nearly 3 months. And I went to the doctor and I said, something's wrong. You know, I shouldn't be going through this for 3 months. And he did a blood test and he said, oh my goodness. He said, it's a good job you came to me now. He said, in like a couple of days to a week, you could have been in hospital seriously ill. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. But prior to that, he said, have you been taking any supplements or anything to give you iron? I said, well, no, but it's funny you should say that, because for some reason, and this was leading up to me having my period, I felt like I kept getting this craving to eat red meat. And I, you know, I was like, where is this craving coming from? It was very strong. And it was like, okay, so thinking back, could my body have been telling me, well, you know, you're about to experience this. We need you to get as much iron as possible, you know, because the craving was very, very strong. And I wanted to eat a lot of it. And, you know, you hear pregnant women, when they go through the pregnancy, will start eating things they've never eaten before. And it's giving their body what it needs. And they don't realize at the time that that's what's happening. Mm. I mean, women used to eat coal to get the benefit from the stuff that was coal, which is, sounds disgusting, but it happened. So it's like, you know, it's absolutely incredible.
Well, that sort of points out the general ignorance about the mind-body connection.
Mm.
You know, people say, well, you're eating ice cream and pickles. What's wrong with you? Instead of, oh, of course.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very true, very true. There's a lot to be said for it. There's a lot of evidence out there for it. Yes, darling, you were about to say something, weren't you?
I was. We're out of time.
We really are. Uh-oh.
So, yes.
Text me about the mind-body connection show.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's do that, Amanda. We'll put that in the works.
I bet
we are
get
live
some
from
listeners of that. Yeah.
I'm sure we will. We'll publicize that in advance. And we are live from Hollywood, and the UK.
Yeah.
Our special
guest
and friend of the show is Chet Gardner, who's an incredible musician himself and producer and bass player and guitar player and singer and songwriter. And he's a very talented guy. What can I say? Over in Hawaii. And great having Chet back on board with us here from time to time. Just, Chet, don't be afraid to call in, man. And we're here Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at... what time? 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I say that because we are in 23 countries around the world, so the time is going to be different from wherever you guys are listening or girls listening to this show. And our number to get on at that time is 515-605-9888. Feel free to contact the show at andyandamandashow@gmail.com. Please do also visit us on the web at andyandamandashow.com. That being said, we got to get out of here. We'll be back on Wednesday. And Amanda, I guess it's time to say goodbye again. Thanks very much, Chet.
Absolutely.
Aloha.
Aloha. On behalf of Andy Kimball in California, Hollywood, and myself, Amanda Love, here in United Chaos, and thanks again to Chet for joining us from Hawaii. Thank you guys for listening, and catch us again on Wednesday for some more fun. Speak
take
soon
care,
and take care. Bye.
Never would have hitchhiked to Birmingham if it hadn't been for love. Never would have caught the train to Louisiana if it hadn't been for love. Never would have run through the blinding rain without $1 to my name if it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. Never would have seen the trouble that I'm in if it hadn't been for love. Would have been gone like a wayward wind if it hadn't been for love. Nobody knows it better than me. I wouldn't be wishing I was free if it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. Fuck old walls against my will. At least I know he's lying still. Soul. Never would have gone to that side of town if it hadn't been for love. Never would have took a mind to track him down if it hadn't been for love. Never would have loaded up a 44 and put myself behind a jailhouse door if it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. Fuck old walls against my will. At least I know he's lying still. Fuck old walls without parole. Lord have mercy on my soul. Ever would have hitchhiked to Birmingham if it hadn't been for love. Never would have caught the train to Louisiana if it hadn't been for love. Never would have loaded up a 44 and put myself behind a jailhouse door if it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. If it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. If it hadn't been.